Hey folks, Rob Wolf here with the ever-large Greg Everett and the even ever-larger John Wellborn. Guys, what's going on? Oh, it's episode 86.
Yeah, speaking of that, the couple times I've stood next to you, John, I've literally felt like an infant.
Really? I don't know if that's good or bad. I kind of want to like pick you up and cradle you like a baby now.
Well, now you're just making it weird.
Yeah. Dude, there's nothing wrong with
I can't believe that it went weird in less than 30 seconds.
It's pretty shocking.
We headed into homoerotic, good-natured towel snapping in the NFL locker room in no time at all.
Well, it's early in the morning.
Yes. So what's new with you guys? John, you just got back from Denmark?
Yeah, we flew over on a Thursday, got there Friday, taught Saturday and Sunday, and then I flew out Monday. So it was pretty much like, 20 hours of travel each way. And I think one of the comments I got on one of my reviews from the seminar was, I didn't seem too lively. commenter, I would say that I sat next to a German guy for 9 hours on my flight across the Atlantic that coughed on me. And needless to say, when I got there, I was feeling a little bit under the weather. So, and then I flew back to Vail and had a doctor's appointment on Tuesday and ended up getting my knee scoped on Wednesday. So I have had kind of a whirlwind week, to say the
least. You had some aftermarket modification. How's all that going?
Yeah, pretty good. You play 10 years in the NFL. It's tough to get out without some bumps and bruises. And that was my fourth clean out on my knee. I had, when I got hurt in 2008, I had come back and got a scope done, and they just removed some debris and a couple things. And I had, over the last 3 years, just lost extension in my knee. And because of it, I'd had some kind of changes in the joint. And they just had to go down there and shave it down to kind of help me get full range of motion. And my knee was really kind of hurt me pretty bad. I want to say probably 6 weeks ago, I think I tore part of my ACL. And for the last 6 weeks, I've been really just pretty hammered and not really been able to train and just been in a lot of pain. So it was nice to go in and get my knee cleaned out. And actually, I came out of surgery feeling better than walking in. So I don't know how many people literally wake up from surgery and go, God, my knee feels better.
I've actually been told that about scopes on the knee by a couple different people. I think I'll go get one.
Yeah, it's, it's just, it's kind of a bummer because you think, hey, they're going to, here's another surgery I got to come back from. But it was kind of cool to wake up and be like, oh man, my knee's actually, moving better. It's not grinding. They removed a bunch of osteophytes and debris. And, it's just, I have better range of motion.
Nice.
Than I did coming in. So I was pretty excited with that. And, I'd hope they'd been a little more aggressive because there was some junk in the back. But Dr. Stedman, who did my surgery, is, pretty good. I mean, he's kind of the Obi-Wan of knee surgery. So I kind of trust,
So does that mean you'll be able to squat all the way down to the medicine ball now?
I hope so. One of these days.
All right.
Well, speaking of that, John, do you want to share with folks what you were up to when you possibly tore the ACL?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had, I'm always ever testing things and trying to, further my knowledge and increase my, knowledge of CrossFit football and, more importantly, how to, redesign my template. So I've been really working on the kind of the professional, the advanced, and I had gone out and trained with Louis Simmons and those guys out of Westside Barbell, trying to figure out a little bit more of what, the Zadiskorsky, Verkashansky stuff was with the, with the speed work and the max effort and just a lot of the Russian stuff. So I came home and decided, hey, I'm going to give this stuff a shot, and I decided that I was going to train for a powerlifting meet. And so we kind of revamped the diet, and I was playing probably about 285, and in about, 10, 12, 14 weeks, I was up to about 327. And
I do that all the time.
Yeah, and then I box squatted, 780 for 2x2, and deadlifted 700. And we had done the box squats for the doubles on Friday. Then we did like a death by prowler thing on Saturday. Then I deadlifted 700 on Monday. And then my knee popped and just exploded with like swelling. And I just couldn't bend it. And when I went in, that was about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And then when I went in to see the doc, he was like, so let me get this right. After 10 years in the NFL, you decide, everything's feeling pretty good. You're training pretty well. You decide you want to train on powerlifting meet. So you put on 30 plus pounds and decide to squat 800 pounds for reps and, deadlift big weight. So how's that doing for you? And I was like, not so good.
Weird.
So
So, yeah, John and I had a few conversations about that, and I was like, don't do it!
It was great. I mean, you know, my bench was probably up well over five, you know, maybe 5.25, 540, and I deadlifted 700 pretty easy. So in my head, I was like, hey, you know, canvas suit, some wraps. I might be in the nines and, you know, bench in the, you know, sixes, sevens, and deadlift in the sevens. And I might come out for my, you know, training for a powerlifting meet for 4 months in total elite. So I kind of had these visions of grandeur. And, kind of ended with a scope and veil. So
I think if we had more morphine, we could have kept you on your training template and you would have been fine and you could have total elite.
No, the problem is I'm 35. If, you know, when I was 23, I was literally like indestructible. I could train hard every single day and run and do everything. And I just think that once again, the 21-year-old in me is getting the 35-year-old in trouble, which sounds crazy because it's not that far off. But I just think when you play in the NFL for as long as I did, it kind of ages you in dog years. So technically, I'm a lot older than my chronological age. It's just, you know, and what's crazy is to go into the surgeon and you're sitting there and he's going through everything and he's like, you realize if your knee wasn't banged up, you'd still be playing. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And he's like, you know, your body other than that looks pretty good and feels pretty good. So it's just, you know, but it just is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, now tell folks a little bit about your experience at Westside. Like you wanted to go out there and get a little bit better handle on, you know, just that conjugate template. Like when you went into all that, you know, it seemed like you had a lot of questions. You know, a lot of the methodology didn't really make sense. You weren't too sure about, like, the volume and intensity trade-offs and stuff like that. Like, tell folks about that.
Well, I guess this process starts a long time ago. When I was 14, I trained with a powerlifter named George Zangas, who was one of the, you know, actually invented the super suit and the wraps. Mm. And George owned a company called Marathon Nutrition, and they invented super suits. So we started training with George when I was 14, and there was a reverse hyper in there, and we'd always look at all these old powerlifting mags, and you know, Louis Simmons and those guys were in there, and George had known Louis for years and he used to talk about him, I mean, with the reverse hyper and a bunch of the stuff. And so we had done some of the stuff when I was younger, and then you know, when I went to, you know, lifted weights in high school, and then when I went to college, we did some more powerlifting, and then I had an Olympic lifting strength coach, a guy named Todd Rice, who came in, and we ditched pretty much anything that looked like powerlifting. I mean, it looked pretty much, we were training probably like, you know, some version of the Russian or the Bulgarian Olympic lifting team. I mean, it was, you know, basically a steady diet of front squats, you know, power cleans, power snatches, and presses. And, you know, the only time we really got any assistance work is when we just did it on our own time. So, and I ended up getting real strong. I mean, I think I had squatted 600 before I was 19. And then when we switched over the template, I ended up front squatting 500 when I was like 21 or 22. So I was pretty pleased with that. And then, you know, and it was kind of interesting coming from a powerlifting background. And I remember Coach Rice told me something that basically if you never get your knees in front of your toes in a squat, you'll never strengthen your knee to the point where it'll be able to handle the pounding of football. And when we looked at a lot of stuff, he goes, you know, Olympic lifters don't have ACL problems. You know, look how much squatting those guys do and they're hardly ever injured. So I ended up kind of switching over and, you know, really looking at shin angle was a big thing. And when I started squatting with my knees over my toes with a little more heel in it, I really, a lot of the knee problems went away. And then, you know, fast forward a bunch of years into the NFL, and I'd always done kind of a Westside template where we had done kind of speed work, and then we would also do kind of volume, and everything was based on volume and intensity. Either it was an intensity day or a volume day. And, you know, there was never any percentages. We didn't really go off any type of, like, periodization in that kind of way. It was always like, hey, if I'm going to do singles today, I'm going to push it as hard as I can. If we're doing volume, we're going to push it as hard as we can. And we ended up doing a lot of sprinting and just a ton of plyos. So when I, probably about a year ago, Louis called me on the phone because he was starting a new certification to certify his Westside Barbell method, and he wanted me to sit on the board. So as he called, we started talking about, you know, everything from training, and he's telling me these, you know, these tales, these guys that are squatting 1,200 pounds and how they can, you know, bang weights every single week, you know, setting 1 RMs. And I had known about the conjugate method, but we had never really done it the way Louis had done it with, you know, off of boxes with different bars. We had used more of a conjugate method, more with lifts, you know, mm-hmm. with front squat, back squat, or different pulls and different Olympic movements. So we'd done it in a different way than he was. So it was just something kind of foreign to me. And when you tell me that, hey, I got a guy that can squat 1,200 pounds, I kind of have a hard time wrapping my head around it because I've been lifting weights for 20 years. And, you know, I know how, you know, like that's just not an arbitrary number. That's like some guy at the gym going, oh, I squat 1,200 pounds. Bullshit. So I, and Louis was like, hey, I think you should come out and train with us and check it out. So I ended up going out there for a couple weeks and seeing his guys, and I couldn't believe how explosive they were, and I couldn't believe how strong they were. And then, you know, I started understanding that, you know, they can take those max effort type movements and do it off the box, because the box is such a interesting lift in that it's not nearly as hard on the body as doing a free squat. So, I mean, these guys can come in and nail these big numbers off of the box and continue to really, really train, and then, you know, take big squats when they go into contests. So it was just really interesting to me, and just a lot of his, you know, assistance work and the way he kind of put it. So it was just kind of something that was outside of what I really knew, and it was awesome. And I was just amazed at how explosive and strong and just all around just thick and big his dudes were. So I came home and was like, all right, well, let's play with it. And, you know, the hard thing is, if you go train with somebody for a couple of weeks, you only get to see, you know, maybe one cycle of training, which is, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is nothing. So I just, what was cool was, Louis's like probably one of the most hospitable people I've ever met. We actually ate 3 meals a day with him for like 17 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We met at Bob Evans at like 6 in the morning, and then after training, we'd go eat lunch, and then he'd meet us for dinner. And for like 6 hours a day, all we talked about was dynamic effort, max effort, conjugate method. And I was able to, after about 17 days, to like kind of really pull it all together, because, you know, Louis can be a little all over the place, and anybody that's seen his videos knows the guy's brain moves 100 miles an hour. So we ended up going home and playing with it, and it was very interesting how we could, you know, continually be adding the weight to the bar and not really getting beat up by doing the box squat. You know, we saw a pretty big carryover. Bo Bergner trains with me.
Mm-hmm.
Bo, geez, I think Bo had about a 350-pound squat, and we ended up he ended up squatting about 4.25 off of the box, pretty short period of time. And he goes up and, you know, PRs his clean and jerk and his snatch by, I think, a couple kilos, which he hadn't done in like 7 years. So it was interesting to see, you know, how well Bo did with it, whereas another one of our lifters ended up going backwards. And we started kind of, when I started trying to figure it out a little bit, I went back and started rereading a bunch of the you know, like super training and a lot of the stuff where this stuff came out of. And, you know, it's the thing which was kind of very apparent is that, yeah, this style of training is for very specific, very advanced athletes. And they make a huge distinction between the difference between people that want to work out and athletes. And it's kind of like the difference between golfers and people that, you know, like to golf. Mm-hmm. You know, I hit a golf ball, but I'm not a golfer. You know, just because I like to exercise doesn't mean I'm an athlete. And there was a huge distinction in that, and that was something I really wrapped my head around, that there has to be a certain volume of training, there has to be a certain history, there has to be a certain building of metabolic pathways, and all that stuff builds like a base of a pyramid up to this, you know, special, you know, strength training, where you take these guys and you can use a very specific method for a very, you know, like, you know, desire or want or goal. And the problem is if you jump on it too soon and you don't build the base of your pyramid, you'll never make the gains. So that was something that was very interesting for me, because all Louis lifters are, you know, the tops in the world. I mean, he's got a guy, Dave Hoff, who shows up at 15, 16 years old and squats 800 pounds.
Wow. There's a
guy in there that squats under 800. I was fortunate in that I was pretty strong, so I could work into the groups. But, I mean, they'll be the first to tell you that if you're not strong when you show up here, you're probably not going to get strong, or you're not going to survive the training. You're going to be broken and beaten. The only guys that really survive are the guys that are real, real strong. So it was just, you know, very interesting for me to sit there and really see the training, take it home and play with it, and then watch my numbers, you know, scream through the roof, and then have another lifter who didn't nearly have the volume of training behind him all of a sudden go backwards. And then we had to go back and look at the program and then kind of rebuild him and figure out what was wrong with him and then get him moving in the right direction. So it was really great for a kind of a strength experiment.
So do you guys, you know, it's always been intriguing to me that within Olympic lifting, we have typically a lot less variety in training. You know, you've got anything like Bulgarian method where it's like back squat, front squat, clean and jerk, power clean, push jerk, you know, power snatch, snatch, and that's potentially like the whole repertoire of movements, whereas like within powerlifting, you've got, I think, some Russian methodology where they stick really close to the three basic lifts, but then you've got obviously West Side Barbell, which they end up potentially not doing anything that looks like the lifts that you're being tested in. Greg, do you think that because Olympic lifting is so much more neurologically demanding, that, you know, the speed component and the technical component, is that part of why we see a lot less variety within the training in general, or am I totally off the launch and there is more variety?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think that large of the percentage of lifters out there are training in a strictly Bulgarian approach. I mean, you still have like China, a lot of the Asian countries, pretty much all the South American countries, and Russia, obviously, are all pretty much still sticking to that old Soviet methodology, which does have a huge variety of training exercises. It's much more volume and variety based as opposed to the Bulgarian thing. And so, you still have ongoing arguments about the whole Bulgarian deal. Obviously, it worked really well for the Bulgarians, but like John was saying, there are certain things that work for certain people and they don't work at all for others. And there are certain things that work at certain times and not at other times for the same person. So I think, there's definitely something to be said about the neurological component of the lifts. And I think people do need very regular, frequent exposure to them in some form. It doesn't necessarily mean they have to do the full competition lifts every single day. But if you took like full on kind of West Side, what Louis Simmons has talked about doing as an Olympic lifting coach, I think that's going too far towards the other end.
Well, not to cut you off, but I think the problem and what Louis kind of missing is that the Olympic lifts are so technical in that they are a sport specific movement. So you can't necessarily get good at a sport specific movement by training general strength. And the analogy I always give people with the Bulgarian stuff, and it was interesting, Coach Berger and I kind of were talking about it. He goes, there's probably one or two lifters in the United States that could probably survive or even benefit from that type of training. And the only analogy I can give it is I played next to a guy named Will Shields, who is, by many people considered probably the best guard to ever play football. Will was an incredible technician, had like natural talent, athleticism, strength, everything you would want to probably be one of the most dominant guards to ever play in football. I had less talent. So for me, Will could go out and practice and just do the plays and be incredible at it. For me, I had to actually go back and work technique and do different things and footsteps, and I had to go lift weights and train and knew I had to be as strong as possible. Whereas a lot of those guys never had to train. They never really had to lift. They just had to go do the practice. And I just wasn't fortunate enough to be in that realm. And I think, with the Bulgarian guys, I think that all they had to do was just their lifts, because they had such a small population and they probably had a ton of guys and they worked up to probably a few and found that one special guy that could kind of manifest in that program. But I think when you're looking at working with bigger groups, I don't think you're going to have that many special people, so you're going to need more work into it. But in the same time, like Greg said, you're going to need to do some version of the lifts because it's so sport specific. I never understood the idea of being generally good at other things if you want to be specifically good at one thing. For me, I just wanted to be really good at football, so I went and practiced football. I didn't go out and, play hoops all day, whereas Tony Gonzalez got better at playing football by playing basketball, whereas it didn't work for me that way.
Well, I think that the tricky thing with weightlifting, too, is you look at a game like football, and even when you're talking about specific positions, there's still such a huge number of skills and physical characteristics that a player needs to be good. Whereas if you look at weightlifting, there's two lifts, and they're very similar. You know, it's a really narrow range of abilities. And not to say that, it's not as valuable or make a judgment call on that, but you don't need to get out there necessarily and do so much variety. The other tricky part is that, the competition lifts, you can't separate the strength component from the speed component from the technical component. They're all just completely tied together.
Well, the training is the competition.
So when you look at football, there's all kinds of different things you can do to train those various physical characteristics. You obviously got to get out there and play. But there, I think there's more options to train those things. And, you know, I'm not really beholden to either the method and with regard to, you know, kind of Bulgarian style or Soviet style. I think both have merit. And I think, you know, if you look at Simmons, oh, he'll even admit, like, all his stuff comes from the old Soviet training manuals.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, straight out of it. So it's not that weightlifters weren't or aren't doing that. It's just that he kind of reinterpreted it and applied it to something different.
Well, he read Zadiskorsky stuff and all Verkhoshansky and was like, you know, hey, this is, you know, shock method, and he was able to adapt it for those guys. And there's something to be said about, you know, lift heavy, you know, lift fast, jump high. I mean, Louis' stuff has worked very, very well. I just think that, you know, a big part of Olympic lifting was always the timing. You know, how many times you've seen a guy over pull the bar or under pull, and people need a certain volume of training to be able to really meet the bar and, you know, have that timing. And some people need more, some people need less, but I, you know, there's no way to, you know, really get good at it without practicing. I work with a speech guy, if you can't tell. I mean, sometimes my speech is terrible, but a guy named Arthur Joseph, and he always jokes and says to me, you know, you get to Carnegie Hall, and we always say practice. I always think that, you know, he says it to me constantly when I get frustrated. And I got to believe Olympic weightlifting, as much as anything, you know, probably fits in that same thing. The only thing I've really noticed is all sports, whether it's Olympic weightlifting or football, the stronger you are, usually the better it works out. So,
yeah,
no doubt. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
the trick, though, is that you have to, that strength has to be there, not to the detriment of all the other skills. And that's where people get tripped up, I think.
Oh, sure. I mean,
you know what I mean? It was, oh, we got to get stronger, stronger, stronger. It's like, okay, yeah, you got to get stronger, but you can't neglect everything else. And I think that's the hard part, is finding that balance.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you have to be able to put in enough technique time. But, you know, in the same right, if you have a population, and unfortunately, you know, Olympic weightlifting isn't real big here in the United States.
But get out of town.
I know, I know. I always tell people, one of my teammates, Boomer Grigsby, was our fullback. We went into the weight room one day, and with metal plates, I watched him pretty much reverse curl power or power clean 405 and kind of push strict pressed it and bring it back down and set it down on the ground. And he's in a set of cleats and on a platform, and looked at me and goes, is that pretty good? I was like, it's really good. And he's like, okay. And he just kind of was like, I'm going to do it a couple more times. I'm like, go for it. And it was one of the funnier, scarier, and like really interesting things I've ever seen. And that's when I realized that there's some really, really strong guys out there that unfortunately aren't in USA Weightlifting.
Yes,
they're getting paid $1 million a year to run down on a kickoff. You know?
Yeah, but see, with weightlifting, they could be guaranteed a life of obscurity and poverty.
I like it.
Of lifting weights in a...
you can win like 10 gold medals and no one will ever know your name.
I know. It seems crazy. You know, you got to think that there's so many athletes out there that there'd be a decent pool for everything. But no, it's interesting.
Well, there's, you know, it's hard. You grow up and obviously you're exposed to football, basketball, baseball, even track and field events. I remember doing that stuff all through school. And not once did I ever see any weightlifting. So it's not a big surprise that we're not having kids get excited about weightlifting when they don't even know it exists.
Sure.
And they're definitely not getting offered any college scholarships to go be weightlifters. There's two schools in the country that do that, and they've got, you know, a dozen spots at the most.
And the first time that the Olympic lifts got on my radar was actually training for powerlifting and reading a lot of Fred Hatfield's stuff, because he started off in Olympic lifting.
Because he's first, awesome.
Because he's awesome. And it was interesting. Like, his stuff is, I would say, not as sophisticated, not as delineated as what Louis does with, like, the conjugate method, but a very powerful eye towards rate of force development.
Yeah.
Fred Hatfield would call it a check mark. Like, you wanted your amortization when you turn a movement on, whether it was a deadlift or a sprint or a box jump or whatever it was, wanted it to just be lightning fast. And his deal was basically move as fast as you can all the time. Like, if you can go up the stairs, leap up the stairs, you know, stuff like that. And it was interesting, like, still to this day, I don't really have a low gear on lifts. Like, it either goes or it doesn't go at all. And it's typically been fairly explosive. And, you know, obviously there's some selection criteria there. Like, I'm not super fast twitch, but relatively so. And then I've kind of gravitated towards these endeavors that kind of bring that stuff about. But it's pretty interesting.
No, I mean, my training philosophy for years was train fast, train slow, be slow. You know, playing the NFL, if you move slow, you didn't play. So I never could really understand the idea of, like, hey, I'm going to do slow motion training. And that's kind of a lot of the those time under tension, like time reps, like four count down, three, zero, you know, all that. I was like, dude, I'm going to move this weight from point A to point B as fast as I can, because the only fast twitch, or the only twitch muscles I want to train are the fast twitch ones. So I never even wanted to even give the slow twitch ones an opportunity to get in there, which, you know, ends up killing me if I have to run more than like 40 yards, because I hit that 41st and all of a sudden my legs felt like they, you know, cement. But I can move quick for the beginning, and that was what was successful for us.
Right.
First exposure to weightlifting came, or Olympic weightlifting came, when I was pretty young. When in high school we did Only the Strong Shall Survive, you know, template by Bill Starr. So we would, you know, it was like bench, squat, deadlift, and power clean. And it was, you know, pretty easy. And, you know, all it looked like is guys were just trying to, like, stand up really fast and curl the weight with their hands wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then
the best thing about Bill Starr is that he was all about shrugs, power shrugs.
Dude, Bill Starr was ridiculously strong. I tell you, yeah. That guy was, was a freak of all freaks. I mean, what was he, like 181 pounds and, you know, had some crazy lifts. So I always was a Bill Starr fan, but that was our first exposure. And then when I got to college was there, and then my second year, Todd Rice came in. I mean, that was really eye-opening, because he brought in some videos and showed us some Eastern Bloc Olympic lifters during their training, the things that they were doing. I mean, the one, you know, these guys were like clean and jerking, like, you know, 450, 500 pounds, and then going over and jumping up on 50-inch boxes like it was nothing. So seeing the explosive nature and, you know, the ability for those guys to generate force, and the fact that they were injury-free, or so we thought, was really appealing to me. I'm like, man, those guys are lifting huge weights. They're doing it really dynamically. They're really explosive. And on top of it, they're injury-free. Looks like a pretty good style of training for me.
Hmm. John, you've done a ton of training with Rafael Ruiz. Like, how does his approach in the weight room and the whole thing, like, how would it compare and contrast with Westside? Like, what's he up to with most of this stuff?
Because,
I mean, he's a hell of an athlete and as a standalone, and then an amazing coach. So, I mean, how's he tackling a lot of this stuff?
Let me see. It's really hard to explain Rafael's stuff because it's so specific. But Rafael, his whole training is, if it doesn't fit directly or have direct application to on the field, to sport, then he doesn't really add it in. Everything is kind of built upon that. So if we're going to squat or we're going to deadlift or whatever we're going to do, it has to, you know, have some direct correlation to us doing this, or it's not going to fit within the program. We also did a ton of balance work. There was a lot of, you know, kind of basic, you know, I hate to use, you know, the word gymnastics is so skewed, but I call it body awareness stuff, where we did a ton of work on gymnastics mats.
To Gymkata.
Kind of appropriate stuff. What's that?
Gymkata.
Yeah, Gymkata. Well, you know, what's crazy is I watched Roth, he weighs about 165 pounds. I watched him run squat 140 kilos for a triple in the set of Nike Shocks below parallel. I also watched the guy do split lunge squats, where he was jumping up and doing split lunges with 150 kilos on his back. So the guy is just an absolute freak of nature. He could do, we would do resisted pull-ups where he would hold himself up and I would get on his back and try to pull him down, and it would take, you know, a few seconds for, you know, me to pull him down. So just very, very explosive, very strong. The base of his program is mainly pulling. I think that's where I got kind of, you know, the idea that, you know, if you pull a lot more than you push, you're usually going to be you're going to be okay. I mean, almost 3-4 to 1 in terms of if you looked at the reps. So Rob's deal was, you know, all the big go muscles are in the back, all the pretty ones are in the front. Let's just train the go muscles. And we just did a, you know, ton of explosive movement. Everything was done, you know, a lot of plyometrics and lifts, but Rob's training is always kind of evolving. I mean, he's a huge user of, he loves to prep muscles, so we did a ton of manual resistance, and we would do, you know, manual resistance sets and then be able to go over and then go over and do the lifts. And so he was always big on kind of prepping muscles, turning them on, getting them firing, And so
why don't you tell people what you mean by that? I think a lot of people don't really understand what that is.
Manual resistance is actually the idea of, like, I'm actually going to use a partner to kind of do eccentric, concentric movement against another partner's kind of, pressure. So let's say, we're doing hamstring curls, I'm laying on my stomach, your partner's actually going to, resist you on both ways and kind of really get those muscles kind of firing in kind of an interesting way. And then we would go over and do a ton of pulls. So he was big on the manual resistance movements and just a lot of stability, a lot of isometric holds. It's just his program. God, it's just so diverse and very interesting. And for some reason, I'm drawing a blank on most of it right now. But if for some reason I'm drawing a blank on a lot of his training. But it's Roth's always been an incredible athlete and just an incredible trainer and works with some great coaches. And I would credit probably the best of my NFL career for when I was training with him. And then unfortunately, when I came back to California and he stayed in Florida, I ended up having to do versions of his stuff. And I think that was kind of the end of me.
Huh. But, well, that's a huge endorsement. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's he travels with us with CrossFit Football, and it's interesting to sit there with 30, 40 people in a room and listen to him talk, and not only trained with him for a bunch of years and heard him speak, and had people just like crickets and big eyes being like, what is this guy talking about? Because it's so far outside the realm of anything they've heard, and it's he's really getting into the physiology of it and kind of how he kind of put this whole thing together, and he's kind of developed his own program and a lot of the movements that we did, whereas, kind of in that CrossFit S idea, like, hey, let's build work capacity and let's go faster. Roth's whole deal was like, let's just try to do everything heavier. So instead of trying to beat your time on different workouts, we would just keep adding weight to the bar. And I thought that was always a lot of fun whenever we did our workouts, because I always didn't gauge myself on speed. It was more like, how heavy can I do something was always a better mark for me.
Which, when we're thinking about like rate of force development and all the attributes that come out of just maximal strength, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, big horsepower. That was always our deal, was just big horsepower. I just want to be able to move as fast as I can and, be able to move those weights as violently as possible. And then be able to go out and run, be able to change direction, be explosive and fast, and actually look like an athlete. That's something that has really come to my mind in a lot in the last couple of years was, you go out and you watch people move, you watch them lift. I'm sure you guys do this too, Greg. You guys watch people Olympic lift, and some people are so good underneath the bar, and you look at them, and it's like pleasing to the eye. And then other people you like want to cringe and look away from.
Yes, that is certainly true.
So, a big part of him was, learn to move athletically, movement patterns and a lot of that stuff. And I think a lot of those things can be trained over time, but that was a huge deal for us. Look like an athlete, be an athlete.
It's cool. John, you got to hang out with Romanov pretty recently. What was it? Tell folks who he is, one, and then what was that like? Like, you were pretty fired up about that exchange.
Yeah, I got invited down to a CrossFit, SME, such subject matter experts, for those that don't know what an SME is. And we got to go to breakfast, and I sat across from Dr. Romanov, and I was pretty excited just to meet him in that. I didn't really understand the pose method. The idea of pushing and pulling when you run didn't really make sense to me. I understand the idea of a midfoot strike, but the fact that anybody that midfoot strikes is a pose runner, I mean, there's just a lot of questions I had, and I just was confused by a lot of it. And I just, just didn't understand what he was trying to teach. And so I was fortunate enough to sit down with him at breakfast, and I knew a little bit of his history, but I didn't necessarily know all of it. And when he started kind of giving me his pedigree, I realized, like, dude, I should just shut up and let this man talk. The guy,
like, his classmate was Zatsiorsky, the guy that wrote Science and Practice of Strength Training, and then his professor was
Berkoshansky.
Yeah,
never heard of him.
Yuri Berkoshansky. So that these were, and the guy was a master sports scientist, which is like a PhD level in our deal, from like the University of Moscow, which is like Eastern Bloc, which doesn't exist anymore, where they took the population and they're like, okay, you are ditch diggers and you are athletes. Athletes will live in special little villages, you'll eat special food, and you'll do nothing but train all day, and the ditch diggers will go dig ditches. So there wasn't this like, I'm an accountant and I'm an athlete. No, your title is athlete on your driver's license. and your goal is to go win gold medals and be the best in the world. So not only was he a master sports scientist, but he was also a triple jumper for Russia and a doctor of biomechanics. When the guy basically designed his own style of running, I mean, broke this model down. And when I asked him all my questions, the guy had some incredible answers for it. And I was really blown away by what he was teaching and realized I just need to shut up and listen to this guy. And he actually started forwarding me articles, and we've kind of created an open dialogue. And I realized sitting there that this guy is, you know, probably one of the best in the world. And he's a guy like Louis Simmons. He's an innovator. He's not only developed his own style of running, goes out and teaches it, and is on top, you know, just a very switched on dude. And on top of it, an incredible person to hang out with. I mean, we talked for the entire day, and the guy had me in stitches. I was laughing my ass off the whole time. I mean, he was telling me my girlfriend and soon-to-be wife is pregnant with twins. So those of you that don't know. And we were sitting there talking about, you know, teaching children how to run. And he was telling me stories about how they taught the children how to run in the athlete villages. And he's like, you know, get baby to fall forward. And it was just incredible just really talking with this guy about, like, how to develop athletes, what they did, how this whole thing kind of progressed, and the idea of, you know, GPP transitioning into sports-specific training, and, you know, what the Russians really did. I mean, it was so enlightening. I was just, it was one of those things where I, like, I'm actually going to try to go down to Florida here pretty quick and maybe go out and hang out with him and just try to pick his brain so much because he's just such an intelligent innovator and incredible guy that, you know, you got to go learn from those guys. And it's just worth, I mean, so many people are just so content to sit on the internet or listen to a podcast and never venture out of their basement or their garage. And, you know, I think the internet has really, you know, done some great things, but the kind of the negative that it's done is it's allowed people to learn stuff without having to go learn from the people that are really teaching it. Because you can just read a blog, listen to a podcast, read a book, get on the internet, get on a forums, and just ask questions and pretend you're an expert because you have 3,000 posts. When, you know, before this, you actually, you know, Greg wanted to learn about Olympic weightlift. You went to Coach B's. I mean, Greg, how long did you live at Coach B's?
Is he there?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just rambling, but I know he went travel to San Diego. And
yeah, I think occasionally somebody comes into Greg's office and distracts him, but he was at NorCal with us for a pretty good chunk of time, and then I think he was down at Coach B's for at least 2 years. And
I mean, look at your Ito, you know, what is it, Ito Portal. I mean,
right.
You know, you were telling me stories about him traveling and going and training with John Bros and actually going and meeting these people and doing the system. And that's how you get good at stuff. Like, you got to travel and meet people. You got to do their system. You got to get into their environment. You know, talking about it on the internet and looking at it a forum and then going into your basement and replicating it, you know, with your dog watching doesn't work. And that's why you have so many lost souls.
Right.
And, you know, you got to show up at a place like a Westside Bar. You got to show up at, you know, go see a guy like Romanoff and go figure out, you know, exactly what he's teaching and go learn from him. And I think that's the important stuff.
John, when you're putting together your programming, how much do you rely on, like, the pre-Levin charts?
Oh, that's that's kind of our guidelines. You know, Prilipin's chart is huge for us. I mean, sometimes we've trained outside of it, and anytime I've trained outside of it, I haven't got my desired effect. So I really use it for our basic lifts and also for, kind of programming volume. I'm not a huge fan of kind of periodization in terms of, like, percentages, but I, you know, like, hey, I want you to train at X percentage today. The problem I've found with that is that everybody's so different. Like, female athletes can lift a higher percentage of their 1RM for more reps, whereas I'm on the exact opposite. I mean, we did a kind of a test where we brought in a whole bunch of people from our gym, and we set them at, like, 85% and had them do max reps. And it was like, for me, I could do maybe 4 or 5, and we had women getting 11, 12, 13 reps at 85%. We had Ben, one of our lifters, getting 8, 9 reps at 85%. You know, and it was just, it was amazing to see that the percentages didn't necessarily work for everybody, but what was good about Prilipin's chart is it gave me an idea on the volume and how to kind of control volume. So I knew, like, the max effort and a lot of that stuff, like, hey, this is the target amount of reps I need you to get at this percentage, and that was how I kind of worked backwards off it.
And after you went out to Westside Barbell and started really tinkering with the pre-Levin charts, like, it really dropped your overall volume and intensity quite a bit, did it not?
100%. Yeah, no, what I did is I found just better ways to do stuff. I had been, you know, kind of, you know, using like a ton of fives and singles and doubles, and I kind of ended up getting away from the fives and mainly going to singles and doubles and looking at total volume instead of looking at, hey, I'm going to lift this many reps for this many sets and this is the rep range I want to hit. I looked at it more like, all right, I need to, this is my volume, this is my intensity or my level of percentage, and this is the total number of volume I need to get. What's the best way for me to get there? And that's when we started kind of looking at this thing and realizing, like, oh, there's more than one way to skin the cat. Like, if you look across at football today, we, you know, there's a squat cluster where, you know, we're trying to hit 25 reps where you're basically doing singles, doubles, or triples, you know, and then racking the weight at 85 to 90% and then trying to get 25 total reps with no longer than 30-second pauses. And that, you know, little cluster was great to help me kind of add hypertrophy and really kind of blast through some sticking points. So I kind of cycled that into the program, and I kind of was going back and looking at some of my old training stuff and realized, like, oh shit, you know, this thing's, you know, we were, you know, doing some dynamic stuff, and then we were kind of going into some 5RMs and always trying to hit the same amount of volume, just trying to play with the rep ranges and the percentages, and it's just been kind of fun. And what's cool is, like that email I forwarded you, I'll get emails all the time that people are like, you know, I've been training for a couple of years and I found this stuff in a matter of a few months. I've, you know, made exponential gains over what I've been doing in the previous years. And we get, you know, anywhere from 2 to 3, 4 of those emails a day.
Yeah, you've got a couple of, like, a world judo champion and some other people following your program and really digging it.
Yeah, we had a guy this weekend, Big Josh, who posts on our site, who's you know, one of the top Highland Games guys in the world, and I know he competed this weekend, and he's, you know, finishes either first, second, or third in the world every year, and he follows the stuff, and, you know, I've written programming for him, and you know, we got another guy who's doing a powerlifting meet, and, you know, we just had some really, yeah, judo guy, we've had a master's track, I mean, we've had some really pretty incredible athletes that have used the programming to really do some amazing things. And for me, that's what I'm excited about. Like, the other one I've been really excited about, and we talked a ton about, is that, you know, not only was I able to go out to Westside, I was able to actually influence those guys a little bit. And by doing Brandon Lilly and AJ and Dave Hoff's diet stuff, those guys have been incredible and have, you know, really packed on some monstrous numbers. So it was cool to go out there and learn their training and also kind of help them a little bit with their diet stuff and get them on track.
Yeah, I mentioned that a little bit, I think, the last podcast, and I didn't feel like it was my story to tell, so I just kind of alluded to it. But tell folks kind of like the West Side philosophy of nutrition before you arrived and then what you did with these guys and then kind of what the results were.
Those guys kind of look at it like, hey, if you make the engine hot enough, it'll burn anything. And they kind of, a lot of the guys kind of pride themselves on eating like shit. And it's just kind of a, you know, hey, I'm going to bang heavy weights and I'm going to, you know, do this and be big and sloppy and just bang heavy weights and who cares what I feed and what I eat. And we definitely know that, you know, diet is probably 70% of this thing. So I know when I was out there, I got to be, tight with AJ Roberts. So we were sitting there and they were doing some nutrition stuff for the Westside deal. And I was like, you know, just shaking my head being like, that just doesn't make sense. And so I started explaining a little bit of what we do with, you know, what I call the Chuck Norris power athlete diet. And, you know, kind of, you know, pretty much what I guess you, Matt, and I have kind of evolved this thing into. And I started kind of just kind of explaining what we were doing. And then AJ contacted me and he's like, you know, I'm stuck at about 2,600 and I need to do something. I'm looking for anything to kind of help this thing. And I'm going back to a more standard Westside template. I just need to go out and set the world record. It's time for me to make my mark. So I ended up sitting down and doing his diet stuff. And in about two and a half, three months time, he came in and added over 200 pounds to his total. And wow. It was Powerlifting Magazine that the only real change that he had made was going back to a more traditional Westside template and my diet stuff. So that was huge. And after AJ total, I think it was 28-25. I mean, the guy's just a monster. At 308, I got contacted by Brandon Lilly, who's another one of their lifters. And I helped, did Brandon stuff. And now Brandon weighs about 320, 330 and sent me a picture yesterday. And the dude looks like, one of those myostatin bulls. Guy's huge. So I'm bigger, stronger, leaner, more muscular than I've ever been. And then he gave me the heads up that Dave Hoff, who holds the world record, and I think in the 275s, he's been eating the same way, and he's packed on 20 pounds. So he was like 258, 260 when he set the world record in the 275s. I think he was up to like 285 now. And Brandon said he's probably got a chance to set the world record for the all-time total in any weight class. So
wow.
These guys have, you know, taken an incredible style of training that Louis designed. And, you know, on top of the training, and this is the thing that's so hard to kind of explain to people, is the Westside method is one, you know, one portion of the training. Training at Westside in the groups, in the environment, is probably the bigger portion of it. I mean, it's like, you know, death metal, gangster rap. I mean, there's, you know, 300-pound big dudes that are squatting monster weights, benching. I mean, everybody's big and tatted up. It kind of reminds me of a prison yard. And when I got out there, I hadn't been in that environment in a long time since I retired in the NFL. And it was, dude, I got excited. I got stronger. It was like I came home and, like, came back with a new desire and, like, put on body weight and started going for this thing. And I'm like, dude, when I go back out there, I'm going to go back there and, you know, and be like, dude, I'm ready to compete in this whole deal. So, you know, I think Dave Tate and Dave Windler wrote a kind of an interesting piece I read, but they were like, you know, what people don't realize at Westside Barbell is that Westside Barbell is what kind of builds these things in that competitive environment. And that if you're some guy just training in your garage by yourself without training partners and, you know, without that generally pissed off attitude, you're just never going to really maximize your potential. And that was something I really took away. But those guys are some of the strongest dudes in the world. And I was glad that I was able to kind of help a little bit. So that was pretty awesome. And then AJ dropped me kind of a nice, you know, a nice plug in Power Magazine, Mark Bell's deal. So I was pretty psyched on that.
Right on. That's cool. Hey, the last question here for both of you guys. Really, what are the secrets for mass gain? Everybody always wants that. Like
The real secrets.
The
more accessible secrets.
We'll go with not necessitating a mule going back and forth to Tijuana for right now. But, you know, like, what's the interplay with volume and intensity? I mean, you've got some protocols out there, like Martin Burkham with Lean Gains. He has a very abbreviated kind of schedule. You've got some other situations where folks are recommending some real high volume type stuff, like 10 sets of six, like 70% of your one rep max and whatnot. Is it all good? Is it what you rotate through? Is it just having some sort of a plan and trying to knock out some goals and move it forward? Like what's the deal?
Well, I would let John start that one off since he weighs about four times as much as I do. I think his skeleton weighs more than I do.
For sure.
You know what? Putting on mass was always fairly, you know, it always seemed pretty easy. Like, I'm always amazed that people, like, struggle so much to, like, you know, really gain body weight. And I think it more has to do with just got to eat enough calories. And the other one is don't get your heart rate up that much for extended periods of time. Like, I know I would weigh myself every day or two when I was playing, and if I was underweight, I just wouldn't condition that day. And, like, my weight would come up, and then when I conditioned, it would kind of come back down. I think most people are just so, like, this is kind of weird, but I think everybody is kind of full of shit with wanting to gain weight, because everybody's like, I want to be big, I want to put on weight, but yet they're never really ever committed to it. Like, you know, all of a sudden they eat good for like 3 days and they start putting on weight and then they get like this like nervous feeling like, oh my God, I'm not going to have abs or I'm going to be fat or, you know, I'm not going to fit in my jeans, and then they don't eat. It's like you have to have, it's kind of like, I guess if you just went and trained hard for 1 week and then took 3 weeks off because you were so sore. I mean, you got to just be able to, you know, consistently pack on the calories. And on top of it, I don't know how to get bigger or stronger without lifting heavy weights. I never got bigger and I never got stronger by lifting like sub-maximal weights for lots of reps, like 70% for like sets of 8 to 10. Never did shit for me. For me to get thicker and bigger and stronger, I always had to train 85, 90, 95% and, you know, try to push it out and really bang those reps. And I mean, other than maybe some body weight stuff or some assistance work, the majority of my training has never been more than fives. You know, I mean, we did those 20 rep squats and I tried to play with things, but you know, all that stuff ever did was just get me weaker. I just figured the stronger I could get and the more, you know, force I could generate and the more food I could eat, and then just don't condition.
Right.
If you want to gain weight, just lift weights twice a day and sit on the couch and don't burn calories.
I forget who said it. You know, don't run when you can walk. Don't walk when you can stand. Don't stand when you can sit. And don't sit when you can lie.
Yeah, it makes complete sense.
I mean, got to relax.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, take it easy. Like, you know, all these people like, you know, oh, okay. So, you, oh, I want to get on. I want to get bigger. I want to get bigger. I want to get bigger. And then you look at their training and they're like, all right, I train 3 times a day and I do, you know, I'm at 180 beats a minute on my heart for 30 minutes each workout. So I have a hundred, you know, something like 90 minutes a day of total training at 180 beats nonstop. I can't put on weight. And I just, you know, lift 135 pounds squats for sets of 50. And you're like, dude, you know, do you even understand muscular endurance? Do you understand hypertrophy? Do you understand, you know, hyperplasia? I mean, like, you start playing into these things and you're like, dude, it's like these crazy women that come in and like, I don't want to get big, so I'm just going to lift light weights for like lots of reps. I'm like, oh, all right, how's that going to work out for you? You know? I mean, it's just, it just blows my mind. I think people have so much ADD that they just don't know what they want to do. And the other thing is, nobody ever sticks to a program. I mean, shit, I get 100 emails a day of people that are trying to, like, you know, cherry pick programs, like, hey, I'm going to do this with this and this. I'm going to do CrossFit football and SEAL Fit and CrossFit, and then I'm going to do CrossFit endurance on the weekends, and then I'm going to follow Greg Everett's Olympic lifting on Sundays. And you're like,
well, now you're just making shit up.
I swear to God.
Greg's never had that email.
I get the same emails every day. Like, I'm going to combine your program with this. How's that going to work? Well, it's not going to fucking work.
Otherwise, you would have probably combined the program.
Yeah.
It's like, I got an email the other day from somebody that was like, I'm on this great strength program that focuses on the squat, the bench, the deadlift, and the press. How am I supposed to incorporate hill sprints into your program? And I was like, I don't know, but I got Jim Windler's email. We're good friends. Jim's program works great. A lot of people have got really strong on it. If you want to do Jim's program, do it, and don't be north of Vag. You know, or like, don't be a pussy, basically. And the guy was like, oh, was it that obvious I was trying to ask you about Jim's program? I'm like, dude. you know, Jim and I, you know, went to dinner. We were in Columbus and text back and forth. And I'm like, come on, man, just fucking follow the program. I mean, it's written for a certain deal. Like, you know, stop trying to be this. Like, everybody has this idea that they're going to, like, find their own magic secret sauce by blending, like, 80 different things, like, and they're going to somehow build themselves into this, like, super monster athlete that has capacity and endurance and strength and power and explosion and can sprint 100 miles barefoot.
Like, oh, CrossFitter?
I mean, it's crazy. It's like, I just looked at it and said, hey, what do I want to be really good at? What's going to fit my job description? What's going to allow me to be the best one I can be, or the best John I can be? All right, I'm going to be really strong, really fast, and really explosive, and that's what my training's going to look like, and I'm never going to deviate from it.
Right.
So I think the problem is most people just don't understand what their real goal is, and I think if your goal is to be excellent at everything, you're just going to be mediocre at a lot of stuff. And, you know, but a lot of people are cool with that. They're like, hey, I just want to be, like, decently good at a bunch of stuff. All right, well, then put a bunch of stuff into your program and be decently good at it.
You know, it's interesting even within that, with, like, the CrossFit Games rolling and whatnot. Like, I know, John, you were coaching several people. I've been coaching some folks. Even within that scenario, we still end up really stripping, like, the good coaches strip the whole thing down, and people are doing some very specific skill work, some very limited, curtailed metabolic work throughout most of the year if they want to get to technical levels, which are going to give them any type of a contention for going to the games or be, you know, getting into regionals or something like that. Like, the pool of people is big enough, and this is kind of a funny thing, because Greg and I wrote about this, God, you know, like, 2006 or something like that, 2005, 2006. But, you know, the people entering that scene and doing really well are former collegiate All-American wrestlers, a few high-level college football players, I think one or two professional football players. And these people are generally just big and mentally tough, like strong, very, very powerful. And then they're grafting on some metabolic engine on the back end of that, and they're destroying stuff.
Well, I mean, it kind of comes down to this thing that if you are a good athlete and you have capacity, you should be able to do a lot of things. And then we get back into that kind of, you know, we talked earlier where, you know, you have a guy like what Romanoff was telling me, that there's a difference between people that exercise and athletes. And if you are just somebody that exercises, that's fine. You can go out and sweat, have a good time, and run around. But just know that, you know, there's a distinction between those people and the people that are showing up to play on Sunday or the people that are running in the Olympics. And those two shall not pass. And it's just, I think what you'll find is that, you know, you're going to really get some good people that mentally can suffer. Because at the end of the day, if, at least for me, when I look at CrossFit, the people that are going to do really, really well at CrossFit are the people that can suffer more than anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, and oddly enough, I don't like to suffer. I like to make other people suffer. So I mean, this is crazy. When I played football, my goal was to try to put my head through your head until you gave up. And I wanted you to feel the pain. I wanted you to suffer. And I had this analogy that every play, you're either the hammer or the nail. And as long as I was the hammer more than I was the nail, I would win. And it worked for me for years because I knew if I could make that guy suffer more than me, then he would give up. And the only time I really ever got into trouble was when that dude could suffer. And, right. And then I would suffer, and then I'd be completely miserable. So something like CrossFit, I'm like, damn, like these people can just go out and suffer and like absolutely destroy themselves. We were doing it for a lot of money. I mean, I guess the, you know, now there's a huge prize involved, but I mean, people are just going out to suffer for suffer. And I think it goes back to the idea that, you know, anytime that there's a marathon, there's thousands of people that show up to do it. You know, if there was a 400 meter race, how many people are really showing up to run the 400 meters? You got a lot of spectators, but shit, I mean, there's, you know, you look at the Boston Marathon, there's like 30,000 people out there wanting to run 26 miles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it just goes to show you that, you know, people like to triathlons and people are good at suffering. And, you know, there's people that like to suffer and there's probably more people that like to suffer than not. And it just, I look at CrossFit and it just, it looks, some of these workouts, it's like, dude, I would be suffering to do that. And, you know, anybody that wants to do it, I'm more than ecstatic to help them with it. And, you know, the problem is you just got to be really, really good at, you know, you got to be a rower, a wrestler, or somebody that has that ability just to like suffer through the worst of things. And I think that's why you see people that are like, you know, like Spieler and these guys. I was interested to see that there was a college football or a pro football player that finished pretty high in one of the regionals and hadn't been crossfitting that long. And, you know, I think he was a running back. And I'm like, those dudes take hits and definitely suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, when this prize money gets big, and they've been saying it for years, but in the same realm, I mean, look at Andy Sakamoto comes out and finishes third in the regionals in Northern California, which is pretty competitive. And, you know, she's, what, 37?
Right.
CrossFitting for a long time and came out and actually just, I mean, and she's tiny. I mean, she's like 116, 118 pounds and just went out there and was just hammering people. So, I mean, it definitely goes to show that, you know, if you got the motor and you can suffer through it, I mean, it'd be all fun.
Yeah, that is not in my wheelhouse. Anything over 10 seconds is way too long.
No, I mean, I always look at it like if the training's not getting me better for my given goal, then the training's got to change. And I think that's, you know, people always ask me where what I'm doing differs from kind of the .com stuff. And it's like, you know, my goal isn't the workout. I've said it from day one. I mean, if the workout and the training isn't helping you get better for your given task or your sport on the field, on the ice, on the gridiron, on the pitch, then you know what? Then the training needs to change. And, you know, I don't care what the times are. I don't care what you do. I mean, you know, you don't measure players. You don't measure athletes based on what they do in training. You measure what happens when the gun fires or the whistle snaps. I mean, you can be the, you know, I'm sure, you know, we've seen with weightlifting, especially powerlifting and Olympic lifting, you guys that will probably, you know, set world records in the training room and then go out there on the stage and just crumble into a million pieces.
Yeah, it's pretty common, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's. I mean, it's in football. We, you know, there were guys that were, you know, we used to call them all pro practice. Guys that would come out and practice and would be like stoning you, throwing big clubs and crushing your life. I mean, offensive linemen that could, you know, bend their knees and explode hips, hands, and you'd be like, dude, this dude's a savage. Get out there on the game day in the, you know, in our game unis, and all of a sudden the gun would snap. And the dude was nowhere to be found. He couldn't move fast enough. He couldn't hit. He couldn't play to the speed. And I think that's what really separates the good from the great. And, you know, that's what you really look for, I think, with athletes. And more importantly, this thing, like, you know, you got to be able to transition from doing it in, you know, in your garage or training to be able to go out and do it on the big stage. And I think that's what will really separate people, or those people that can rise to the occasion.
That's cool. That's cool. Hey, John, it was fun having you on. When can we get you back on here?
You know what? I'm not that mobile right now. I'm crutching around, so you can kind of catch me anytime.
You're easy prey. You're like a chick in high heels right now, so that's cool.
Now you're making it weird.
Awesome, guys. Well, good show. Johnny, thanks for being on. Greg, thank you. Let's see here. This one's going up in a couple of weeks. I'm going to be out of pocket for a while, so we're trying to bank a couple of these guys. But if folks have other questions for John, definitely drop them in the comments on the podcast. And then when we get them back on here, we can hit those down the road.
Cool. Thanks.
Sweet.
Awesome, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. See ya.
Bye.